you're still here.
I am still here.
We're going to be talking about Weight Loss Part 2, which is season 5, kind of episode 2. I don't know. It was all mushed together. They both aired on September 25th, so I'm assuming they aired together. But we are going to continue talking about this whole weight loss journey that's happening in the office, because this corporate initiative is still going on. And I love how this episode's really different, because they kind of put these chapter markers in throughout this entire long double episode, two episode thing, where they show you each week what's happening. And in addition to putting up like the little chapter markers of like, oh, week 4, and this is assumedly going through the summer, their summertime, and Pam's away, and Dwight and Angela are having an affair, Andy's planning a wedding, everyone's trying to lose weight, all this stuff is happening, and we get to see these really weird little glimpses of how everyone's changing throughout the summer. And that happens with we see this one moment, Meredith is like covered in like sores all over
her
face.
I didn't really understand that, and then I was looking at the I think Dunderpedia, and it was like part of a like deleted scene about like going on some boat or like hanging by a pool. I don't know.
There's a couple things like that that end up becoming visual gags, and it's never really explained, and we find out that it was in a deleted scene, or it was from one of the webisodes or something like that. But it ends up becoming more of a deep cut for super fans, and it's also ends up being a little bit more disjointed. I think that that's why we don't usually talk about the deleted scenes, because they were deleted for a reason. At least that's where I come from.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
If it's just a funny gag that Meredith all of a sudden one day has all these sores all over her face, that's kind of on brand for Meredith. So we're like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah, it really is. We don't really have to know a lot about Meredith. We can be like, oh yeah, that's very Meredith. She's just like salmon orange today.
And we also have this great running gag in this episode with facial hair, because who comes in right away in the beginning of this episode?
How's my favorite branch doing? All right.
It's back with the goatee.
He walks in like he used to when it was his job. And I do love that he says that kind of catchphrase he has now. And then he goes and sits behind reception. It's so defeating. Yeah. I love seeing Ryan kind of put in his place. But he comes back with some vengeance and has this little black book with him where he's taking names.
I'm keeping a list of everyone who wrongs me, so when I'm back on top, they'll be sorry.
And they got rid of Ronnie, because apparently Ronnie was blech.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know, she was your favorite.
Yeah. I really don't understand what Michael sees in him.
Well, he's handsome, right?
Sure, I guess.
I love everyone's surprised face when Ryan comes in. They're like, wait, this can't be happening. This isn't right.
Fire the guy.
Hey, Kevin. That's really funny.
Yeah.
It's great to see you, Kev.
Good joke.
That's such a good one.
Kevin's got some good ones.
He does. He's a sleeper cell. That's what he is. But Ryan comes in with some very distinctive facial hair, and we already saw Michael sporting the same facial hair, and we find out that, of course, Michael has a goatee because Ryan had a goatee. And I do like the running facial hair gag that goes on. We have a moment where Ryan shaves after he sees Michael having a goatee, and then later on Dwight is trying to grow one. Mm-hmm. And then Michael also gets rid of his, and Dwight's left with one, because it takes a while to grow facial hair. So it took a while for Dwight to catch up.
Yeah, and to shape it in that very strange goatee. Dwight didn't do a very good job with it, but he's trying. He just wants to be like Michael.
What did you think of Michael's goatee?
I'm not a big fan of facial hair, but it just made me so uncomfortable. Just, I'm so used to just clean shaven, just Michael Scott. And then to see him come in with a goatee was very unsettling. I will say that. I think it does not fit him at all.
There are moments where he looks really creepy in it.
Yeah.
really creepy. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad it didn't last very long.
Me too. There
he even was Michael Klump with the goatee, which made Michael Klump even creepier.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, Michael Klump.
Oh, bang, boom, shake, clump.
Yeah, that's a whole another thing.
that's the end.
The weight loss.
Yeah.
Program initiative starts getting out of hand. I mean, in the very end of the last episode, we leave Kelly having swallowed a not tapeworm from Creed in an effort to lose weight. And it just kind of escalates from there. We have Dwight starting to accuse people in the office of not pulling their weight, even though he won't take his own responsibility. And he then, of course, takes control of the situation in his extreme Dwight way and requests that the three heaviest people in the office get liposuction at their own expense. Mm-hmm. So the extreme version of this weight loss, it's getting out of hand in the office.
Yeah, and Andy said something really funny.
This is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life. I haven't had a very hard life.
I think about that a lot whenever I'm complaining. It's just like, oh, Andy, that weight loss thing for 3 extra vacation days was the hardest thing he's ever had to do.
I like how there's that little pause in it right before he says, I haven't had a very hard life, because I can almost hear the eye roll from the camera operator as Andy's saying that. Mm-hmm. And then Andy admitting that he hasn't had a very yeah, hard
at
life.
Least he understands that.
That's true. Andy is strangely self-aware sometimes. Mm-hmm. But not, like, he doesn't really understand what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Because he's absolutely oblivious to basically everyone else, but yeah. But he does see what's going on in his own life sometimes, so at least he's not lying and thinks he had a hard life.
Yeah.
In another extreme effort to kind of control the weight loss situation, Dwight takes Phyllis on a fake sales call and leaves her 5 miles from the office.
Are you insane?
Hey, hey, what happened?
There was no client. Dwight drove me to an abandoned warehouse 5 miles away and pushed me out of the car. I had to walk home with no money and no phone.
And you burned over 1,000 calories walking home. And this branch just got a little bit closer to winning the contest. Phyllis Vance, ladies and gentlemen.
You left me in a bad part of town.
Yeah, I took your purse. What are you worried about?
And she is forced to walk back. And that has infuriated her to the extent that she then basically reports all of the goings on to corporate. And that is the catalyst that brings out Michael Klump.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, Michael Klump. So Holly starts this very standard HR oriented, this wasn't the goal of the program, just everybody do this safely, that we were trying to get you all to lose weight, but not in an unhealthy way. And then Michael Klump barges in and everyone knows right away it's Michael Klump. And Michael doesn't admit that at first.
Now, I know a lot of you are probably asking yourself, why are you dressed in a plus size suit?
Because you're kind of doing Michael Klump.
How do you know Michael Klump?
Because it's your making fun of fat people character.
How dare you? Michael Klump is a celebration of fat people.
And I noticed Michael puts up these pictures and he's like, you are beautiful, they are beautiful, all that stuff. I noticed some of the pictures. One of them was Jabba the Hutt. One of them was a pig. One of them I thought was Elvis, which I thought was really funny. And then these, like, two, like, seemingly obese guys on bikes. Don't know.
Oh, those are, like, these Guinness Book of World Record twins.
Oh.
For being, like, the world's heaviest twins or something. I don't know. They were big at the time and very recognizable.
Got it. I just thought those little photos that Michael always seems to put up in his meetings are just so funny.
I do like that the banner that's put up that's basically like printed out on a whole bunch of pieces of printer paper. I like that it's in quotes. It says body image celebration in quotes.
Oh, goodness.
Which is like one of those standard office mistakes where people just, they put something in quotes when they want it to be emphasized, but that's not what quotes mean. And so that's what it's even funnier is that it's body image celebration. Like, not really. But there ended up being a positive element to the body image celebration. I liked when he got Kelly up on the chair and had everyone say really nice things about her.
Kelly, I want you to stand up on your chair. Here we go. Okay, I want you to look at her. She's a beautiful Indian woman. Why? What makes her beautiful?
Everything. She's perfect.
I like her nails.
Okay, be more specific.
I like her fingernails.
I like her purple dress.
What about her looks?
Hell of an ass.
What else do people like?
I thought that that was a really good thing that could have went really bad.
Yeah.
I picture the Michael from like two seasons ago even doing something like that, and it could have went really bad. But it was actually a really good positive thing for Kelly. And I like the way that Holly looks at Michael as he is praising Kelly for who she is and feeling comfortable with who she is and that everyone likes her and that everyone like says things that they liked about her. I thought that was a really great thing. And Holly looked like she liked it too. Like she was proud of Michael in that moment. And even though he's wearing the sumo suit, like deflated under this other giant suit, she is still looking at him with some admiration and pride for doing a good job and helping out one of his employees who was feeling particularly low.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, it could have gone very wrong. And it was heading in that direction for a long time in that meeting. Apparently, it was 2 hours, Jim said. Two hours of Michael Klump. So I think a lot of that got cut out. But it ended in a very wholesome place, just like complimenting Kelly for who she is, even though Michael backpedals on that.
Hey, is that healthy food? We're trying to win a contest here, Kelly, please.
Yeah, it all gets away from them when they find out that they're really close to winning, and then everyone just goes extreme again.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that happens with Kelly is that Ryan tries to get her back.
Kelly.
Oh, hello, Ryan. You look well.
I wanted to say I'm sorry for treating you bad the past couple of years. I was in my mid-20s, and I was going through a lot of stuff. I think I never really processed 9/11. I want you to know I've changed.
Cool.
We should get a drink later. Catch up. Pick me up around 8.
Oh, that is so sweet. But I'm dating Daryl still, and we're like crazy in love, so.
Cool. Well, maybe I'll see you around.
It's a small office.
We're seeing a big shift in the Ryan-Kelly relationship, where before Kelly is falling all over Ryan, but now she's with Daryl, even though she's not really very much with Daryl, and Ryan is becoming desperate for her. They are just two messed up needy people, and they have this long, tumultuous relationship, and this is the beginning of the shift towards the Ryan neediness, because he's essentially lost everything and now he's trying to get back the one person that was falling all over him, and he can't even get her, so he's starting to fall all over her.
Yeah, I think Ryan comes in the beginning and it's like, so I'm back. What do you think? Pick me up at 8? I thought it was so funny that he said, pick me up, not I'll pick you up.
Of course.
Because
he's expecting her to just cater
over
to him.
It, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what he was looking for, because he's lost everything. So he wanted validation from someone like Kelly, who before in his life was just, she was infatuated with him. And then to not even have that, oh, Ryan, you have fallen so far.
Yeah, I didn't feel bad for Ryan in that moment, but it was kind of just like, oh,
I don't feel bad for him,
Ryan.
No way.
Oh, Ryan, it's just very sad. It's like, he has absolutely nothing. The one, like, thing he could rely on was Kelly, and then Kelly is just, like, too good for him now, which she was the whole time, but she realizes, even though, like, going to Daryl, it's not that great of a move, because it's, from Daryl's side, very casual. I think it's better for Kelly, but their relationship is so toxic. But I think Kelly's acting like she knows that, but later she falls back into the Ryan trap.
She does. There's another relationship going on. Well, Pam and Jim, they've been apart now for a while. And I think Jim says he hasn't seen Pam in like 10 days.
Summer's going great. Just spent 2 hours listening to Michael Klump. I have a weird pain in my left side that I'm convinced is an ulcer. My girlfriend lives in New York, and I haven't seen her in 10 days. How's your summer?
Yeah, he's miserable.
I like to see them chatting on IM. It was fun seeing their screen names. Mm-hmm. Did you see their screen names?
Yeah, Jim's is like Jim and then a bunch of numbers. And then
9334.
Yeah, and then Pam's is receptionitis? I had to pause it and look in, and I was like, that doesn't say receptionist. There's something else there.
I tried Googling it, too, and I didn't really come up with any concrete answers besides a couple people reading it in, like, two different ways. And I really like Pam texts Jim. Well, I shouldn't say text. Pam is chatting with Jim, and she shows him her summer project. Mm-hmm. And it makes Jim, like, that stifled laugh, like, right out loud. Yeah. And it's this really funny digital Dwight made out of all these type characters, and Jim prints it out, and he has this funny little confessional reaction with it. I love the joy that Pam is able to give Jim. I think that they work so well together. They're such good friends, and they know exactly what jokes to play on each other and what will make each other laugh. And those little laughs throughout the day just make them fall more and more in love with each other. And it's just the most adorable thing to watch.
Yeah, it's really sweet. And Pam made a new friend. Do we know his name?
No, but we saw that she was starting to make some new friends. Mm-hmm.
And he is kind of like Jim in the early seasons, just being like joking with her. And I honestly feel really bad for that guy. Because
his jokes are a little bit Jim, like, because they are kind of funny, and like, they play on Pam's humor in the same way,
but like in a more artsy, because the drawing of the guy with the grown
with
out
the beard.
Like that's really funny, and that's adorable, and if it wasn't Pam, I think we would be all for that. But
it's true, that's a good way to look at it.
And
it's a little too late.
Oh, very unfortunate. Very Toby-like in that way. Just too late, bud.
Oh, this Toby.
Oh, Toby. Oh, my heart.
No, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Okay.
But first, I want to talk about the big thing that happens with Jim and Pam, since we're already talking about them. I don't want to wait. Mm-hmm. When they were talking on AIM, or as we used to call it back in the day, IM messages, they were deciding to meet up. And because Jim just... he's been away from her for too long. And I like that Jim takes the initiative. I like that he shows his affection by like going out there and like getting her, essentially. You know, he's like, we're going to go meet for lunch. We're going to do this fun, spontaneous thing. And we're going to do this. And she's like, oh, okay. And so they meet at a rest stop in between Scranton and New York, which I think is so sweet. It's pouring rain. Oh, and he drops his jacket, gets down on his knee, and he totally proposes.
It's so sweet. Oh my goodness, he just couldn't wait.
That's what he says, and my heart just flies away in that moment. Beautiful proposal. Oh, and that kiss. That kiss is so much love.
Yeah, I feel like I teared up or cried the first time I saw that.
I was going to ask you how you felt the first time. Did you expect it? Because it's so out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't think I expected it. I don't really remember. I've seen it so many times. But it just hits me every time because it's so basically like... Jim just did not care where it was at all. It's at this just gas station in the rain not ideal conditions for a normal proposal, but the fact that he just couldn't wait is just so clear in that. Also, I do have a fun fact. I think I read somewhere that that was like one of the most expensive shots in the whole series because they totally built that from scratch. They built like the whole set of the gas station. Yeah, I think I did read that. I'll check.
Well, because they must have, or wherever they filmed it, because I do know that there is no exit 17 anywhere between Scranton and New York. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea that they're meeting at this one place, it doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
So they had to set it up somewhere.
Mm-hmm. But I did hear they built the whole thing, and it cost so much money.
Well, before we get to Wet Tuna returning to the weigh-in, mm-hmm. we do have the office crew kind of amping up their competition towards the end of this episode. And I bring that up because I just really want to drop in this Andy quote that I absolutely love.
Andy Bernard does not lose contests. He wins them, or he quits them. Because they're unfair.
That's another Andy kind of knowing himself.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, this is something I do. But I don't think he really knows what that actually means and how terrible it sounds. Mm-hmm. But it's so very Andy. And I really like it. In addition to all of this, we have Holly with some tickets to Counting Crows, and she's essentially not stood up, but she hasn't been called back from her yoga instructor date. And Michael tries to make Holly feel better by offering to buy these tickets from her. But again, it's like, why didn't Holly invite Michael? They bring up these tickets like three times throughout this episode. And that this guy isn't calling back, why wouldn't Holly just be like, hey, if I don't hear from him, do you want to go to the concert with me?
Yeah. Or that when Michael would have bought them and be like, oh, do you want to go with me? That would have been so good. There are so many opportunities.
That's Michael's poor decision making happening.
Yeah, really.
Where he sees one out that he is like just fixated on and he doesn't think about what else he could have done. But I get the most annoyed in movies or TV shows when people aren't just saying what they want to say to each other. I'm like, just say mm-hmm. it. If it's going to mess everything up or it's going to be crazy, just say it anyway. Because so much heartbreak or bad things happen or misconnections, like all of that happens because people just don't say what they want to say. And that always bugs me, or like a miscommunication, or mm-hmm. like people holding something back.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things. It's like Holly is holding back her real feelings about Michael. She's obviously interested in him. So why wouldn't she just invite him to the concert? Even just saying like, tack on it as friends. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like that to me, it doesn't seem realistic. And it bugs me in this episode that she doesn't do that.
Yeah, I really get that. But also, I mean, maybe it's just because I am not old and I am just still
old.
No, I'm not an adult yet, technically.
Well, technically,
I'm still 17.
You're close.
I'm almost there.
Don't tell
it's
anyone.
A secret.
Nobody knows.
I am.
You could be whatever age you want.
I am under 20 and I have recently been in school, and I think with younger people or less mature people, confronting your feelings and being open is less realistic. So, like, mm-hmm. I thought, like, weirdly, it was realistic that they didn't, like, just be like, okay, let's go for it. I thought that was pretty real because the consequences could be so bad, like, working together and just being around each other all the time. I understand how people wouldn't want to risk that.
I mean, maybe it is a testament to their emotional maturity.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe they are reacting to each other in kind of like this adolescent, like new, inexperienced kind of way where they just don't know how to communicate to each other, or they haven't lived enough to be afraid of not communicating, you know? So yeah, maybe I think you're right. Yeah. I can see that perspective.
Yeah, because right.
I'm less mad. I'm a little less mad.
A lot of people could have just been like, openly done what we would have wanted them to do, but I feel like mm-hmm. there are so many people who keep it bottled up. So I think that was like a good representation of people who like don't immediately like off the bat confess their like feelings and really go for it, and you can see it still works out.
There is, talking about not confessing feelings, Angela and Andy are still wedding planning.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a moment last episode, I don't think we brought it up, but Andy says something very sweet to Angela, and she ends up not meeting Dwight in the warehouse when she had paged him because Andy had said something nice, and she kind of like not fell for it, but I guess, you know, felt some affection towards Andy and didn't run to Dwight.
Sweetheart, just so you know, I don't care where we get married. I'll marry you right here in this building. I'll marry you in the parking lot. I'll marry you in the eye of a hurricane in the middle of a snowstorm on top of a monsoon. All I care about is that we're going to spend the rest of our lives together.
We kind of see the residuals of this in the second part of this episode, where she is more amenable to some of the wedding planning, and she requests Little Drummer Boy as the song that she wants to dance to.
Oh, that,
because it's her favorite.
Yeah, if Dwight went to that wedding, he would just be broken by that. Oh my goodness.
But Andy puts the spin on it that it will be done by his a cappella group, Here Comes Trouble, and he starts naming all the people that are going to be there. And as Andy is like rambling on and on and on more about this a cappella group,
but you know what? You're going to love these guys. Carl 1, Carl 2, Broccoli Rob, Spare Rib, Doobie, Lunchbox, Boner Champ, that's me, Puby Lewis in the News, Hopscotch, Jingle Jangle, Sandwich. These are the best man a guy could ever hope for.
Let's talk about this later.
Angela goes right back to Dwight and pages him again and walks away from Andy. So that whole, the moment that there was some tenderness or maybe some, a little bit of mental commitment from Angela's side just went right out the window as Andy got deep into the weeds of Andiness. And again, showing how not right for each other they are.
Yeah, because you could see it in the way that like, oh, Angela's finally like trying to be in this relationship, and then she just clearly sees they're just not right for each other in the slightest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her really extreme demands really just fit what she would want to do with Dwight, which I thought was really like interesting, because I think Angela knows that she just wants to be with Dwight, but she's just sticking it out with Andy.
I think it's more of vengeance at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's like creating this dream wedding that would be perfect for her and Dwight, with Little Drummer Boy and in the barn, and all of her insane details are just fixed for, I think, her dream wedding with Dwight. But she's trying to, like, see if it could be lived out through Andy, and I think she knows that it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Angela is, she has a hard time letting things go,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do find out that the office, they do not win the weight competition. They lost to Utica, unfortunately. Even their last-ditch efforts of turning up the heat and wearing garbage bag sweatsuits to make weight, it doesn't create a win for them. But, you know, we have Jim showing up last minute, kind of drenched. I mean, I don't think he helped put he put extra weight on the scale with his, you know, wet clothes and everything from proposing to Pam in the rain. But imagine coming off of a proposal like that, having to say goodbye, like your fiance, your brand new fiance goes away. You have to go back to the office and like weigh in. Like, it's just such a,
but he's so happy. And when Dwight says, "What are you smiling about there, smiley pants?" I was just like, nobody knows except for us and Jim. And it's just so interesting to see how Dwight just naturally, like, reacts to Jim, even though we know, like, what just happened to him. And how, like, what Dwight says doesn't even affect him, because he's just so happy.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so unexpected. It's just so unexpected. Mm-hmm. I love that it's, like, shoved into it's the second episode of the fifth season.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least maybe even the first episode, the way it actually aired. But I feel like a proposal is something you have for a season finale.
And
like, that's what
it was supposed to be at the season finale. That's when it was planned, like, for the end of season four.
Yes. Yep.
And the fact that it's coming back this fast shows just, like, how much they just couldn't wait.
Yes, that's such a good point. It is. It's just like, hey, we can't wait to get these two people together. They can't wait to get together.
Yeah, we're not going to wait till the end of season five. We just got to do it now.
I like that they let the documentary style kind of tell itself. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not forcing it into a formulaic seasonal thing. I mean, even though you think about, like, yeah, documentaries are edited and, like, the story, the narrative is crafted, but we are seeing a little bit more of the humanity of it with Jim's urgency mm-hmm. in proposing to Pam. And the very final scene of this episode.
Toby.
Oh, we get to go see Toby in Costa Rica.
He has visitors. The camera crew came to visit.
In the hospital, because Toby's in the hospital because he broke his neck on his third day in Costa Rica and been in the hospital for 5 weeks.
Still hasn't seen the beach.
I went ziplining my third day in Costa Rica. I guess the harness wasn't strapped in exactly right. I broke my neck.
Oh my gosh, he's so sad.
It's just heartbreaking. And I'm not a big Toby fan, but this one just... It just hit so different. I was like, oh my God, you poor soul. I just...
Toby's such a droopy dog. Oh, he's just so droopy.
In my notes, I wrote down, Toby, poor sad Toby. I just felt so bad. I was like, oh, he is just trying to start a new thing and is just cut short. And it's so funny. It's so, so sadly funny.
What I wrote in my notes, I just wrote, OMG Toby. He is... He is just
really not having a good time.
Yep. He's the saddest of all the sad sacks.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have visitors.
Thank you everyone for listening. Be sure to go follow us over at tall_beats. Make sure you go over and subscribe to become a member of the Incomparable, or go like us in Apple Podcasts. Yeah, you should just go give us some great reviews, because some cheers for Jamie for joining us. And we will be back in the next episode to talk about season 5, episode 3. Yeah, I guess it's 3. Business Ethics.
Oh. Good one.
Let's get ethical. Ethical. I love that song.
Yeah. Michael and Holly in full force in that one.